Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your freethinking historian.
Hello, and I'm Don, political science and philosopher.
Hello, I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist and amateur lawn bowling instructor.
How are you now? I'm Elon, the computer science nerd, and we have a special guest today, Kennedy Goodkey, the writer and
producer
of The Beast of Bottomless Lake, a movie about Ogopogo, which we'll talk about later. But hello, Kennedy.
Hey, guys.
That movie's directed by Craig March, correct?
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, in this day in history, we have a very important day in this history. This show probably wouldn't have existed without this particular event. Today is my mother's birthday, so I'd like to wish a very heartfelt and loving happy birthday, Mom.
What are you saying, Don?
Well, I'm saying that without the birth of my mother, Don, I wouldn't have existed. I'm a determinist, you know.
And then our show would, anyway.
Well, not Jerk. That I'm the most important part of the show, but my mom says so, and today's the day I'm not going to disagree with her.
Fair enough.
Speaking of other important events, almost as important, I believe today, in 2003, the U.S. government officially recognized and told the public about the existence of Area 51.
What?
I know! Thousands of conspiracy nuts went, yes!
And what exactly did they admit was going on in Area 51?
Yeah, aliens, right? They had aliens there and a spaceship.
They only admitted it existed, and that was about it.
So there is an area that's numbered 51. It comes right after Area 50.
Well, you can see it on Google Maps.
Actually, I think part of it is Area 51 is a genuine place where they do actual research into advanced aeronautics and that type of thing for the Army. Not space aeronautics, although I guess NASA could be related, but, you know, stealth airplanes and stuff like that start off in things like Area 51, and there's a lot of black sites that the American government has. One of them happens to call Area 51 and became the nucleus for this pseudoscience wonder bar.
And it happens to be where they store the Lost Ark of the Covenant, too.
In the warehouse where Indiana Jones came. about that now.
About
warehouse 13 or something.
Okay, well,
we don't know that show.
Let's go to our first news story. So, Elon, what happened with Prime Minister Stephen Harper and a wafer?
This is the best news story ever, I would say. Prime Minister Stephen Harper is in a lot of trouble right now because he was at a funeral for the former Governor General Romeo LeBlanc. This was a Catholic ceremony, and naturally they had communion, which is the practice of taking wine and bread and somehow transforming them into the blood and flesh of Jesus Christ. We all know this.
Through the magic of transubstantiation.
Yeah, but everyone knows, I mean, Harper's a conservative, right? I mean, eating his enemies, he does that every day, so communion should be no problem for him.
Right, well, I didn't mention, then you eat Jesus. You don't only, so it's not only the magic trick, then you, like, eat him.
Yeah, it's a bit like going to Disneyland where you consume Mickey Mouse, except...
Okay,
just a weird version. Anyhow, so then apparently there's a big controversy because in a video of the funeral, it showed that Prime Minister Stephen Harper received the wafer, but instead of putting it in his mouth, he pocketed the wafer. He didn't eat the wafer.
He was saving it for later.
A little sleight of hand.
He already had breakfast, I guess. So anyways, right after this broke, the Prime Minister's office issued a statement saying that he did eat it, but the camera had moved on by then. And then, of course, now there's, like, Protestants saying that he shouldn't have eaten it, actually, because according to their tradition, you could only eat the wafer that's given to you by a Protestant priest. So now the Protestants are mad at him, the Catholics are mad at him for not eating it.
And this story is making front page news, headline, you know,
You've
reports.
You've got to be kidding me.
He should send it to P.Z. Myers.
Actually, he commented on this on his blog.
P.Z. Awesome. Myers is a skeptical blogger.
Yes, Pharyngula. You should look it up if you like this.
There's
show.
There's also
like Pharyngula.
An incident with a communion wafer that PZ was attached to, so I invite our listeners to look that up. It's very funny.
You know, I'm sure this is purely coincidental, but the Pope actually had an interview with Harper. Now, I don't know for sure it was over this incident, but it did happen shortly after this incident, and I just have to wonder, I mean, when Harper met the Pope, did he, you know, have milk and cookies, or did he reject that too?
That's a good question.
He was asking for absolution, but the Pope was like, all right, get in the booth.
So, you are a very, very bad man.
According to the last time I had checked, Canada is a country with a separation of church and state, right?
Well,
like, isn't it supposed to be not important what religion our leaders have?
Actually, no. Technically, the United States has it in their constitution, a separation between church and state. Canada has no such thing. In fact, and this is so embarrassing to me as a Canadian, in our Constitution that we created in 1982, conservatives among others put into our preamble of our Constitution that Canada was created as a nation under God and for the sake of Christianity, as a Christian nation.
Does that mean that Harper should maybe be impeached if he went against our Constitution?
You sound really excited there.
No, I voted.
Well, no, I find this is one of those things that we sit and spend a lot of time kicking on Americans because, well, it's easy to do. But at the same time, I mean, we, you know, our Prime Minister doesn't take a communion, it becomes front page news. I mean, it's a magic ceremony by a bunch of foo-foo people. Who cares? He was there to give memory to this person who died, who was important to the nation.
Maybe it's just...
Sure, but the rest of it seems like such a...
Maybe we just it's just a slow news cycle in Canada sometimes. There's not much going on.
Well, speaking of slow news cycles, something else made front page news that was...
Well, this is actually pretty interesting, I think. But the Vancouver Sun had an article last week that a miracle had taken place at Vancouver General Hospital. And the article mentions a man named Peter Anderson who had two flesh-eating diseases and was basically within hours of dying. His wife sent for a Reverend John Horgan, and Horgan came in with a relic of a monk, an Irish-French monk who died in 1923 named Columba Marmion. I'm probably saying that wrong. Anyway, he... prayed to the saint or the Columba on behalf of the sick man, and he made a fantastic recovery. In fact, he made a near full recovery. He didn't suffer brain damage. He needs a cane to walk, but he's otherwise fully mobile. Right. It is essentially a miracle.
Wow!
Did the
maybe
diseases eat each other?
That's exactly what I was thinking. He had two of them. Maybe they just.
Well,
each other.
This is actually.
And they went off to a bar somewhere, and they just said, "You know, this, I got a better place to go. Let's go back to my place."
Swallowed itself and scampered south.
Well, the Catholic
What's a virus like you doing to a dude like this.
Okay.
This could go on all show.
The Catholic Church is actually going to formally investigate this matter to see if a miracle took place. And there's a you know a big process of that. But here's what I think.
So the scientific advisor of the Catholic Church is going to go and
yeah. They actually have scientific advisors. It's kind of they're actually approaching this kind of skeptically. I think they don't want to declare something.
The Catholic Church has been known to denounce things as ridiculous before. I mean, a couple months ago they denounced Reiki as unscientific.
But having said that, though, the past Pope and I believe this current Pope believed in making a lot of saints. He thought saints were good for people's spirits. If there were a lot of saints, they could believe it. It was good marketing for
if you make
Catholic
enough saints,
Church.
You could have a deck of trading cards of different saints and then sell packs of them.
Yeah.
There's already about 23 of them, so I think
sorry, Ethan, before you go into your reasonable thing, there's one other meta question.
Ethan's such a downer, always being reasonable.
It's that historian aspect of him, right? He wants facts. It's a skeptic show. All we deal in is facts. No. Praying to a monk or to the relic, I mean, isn't that like, you know, the golden calf? Isn't that idolatry? Shouldn't you be paying to God? And
you don't
need some idol to worship.
You mentioned that, Don, because the whole Protestant Reformation, which part of it took off because of the whole communion thing, they thought it was ridiculous, was also the huge thing with worshiping saints. And why is it that Jesus is like the third most prayed to dude in Rome? It's a little confusing. But anyway, being reasonable.
Third most?
A few things jumped out at me about this story.
Who's the first most?
What's that?
First I can guess, but who's the second?
It's Mary, I believe.
Oh,
I don't,
Mary's higher than Jesus.
I think it's just probably a local
saint. Well, you know, Mary was a mom, and today's a special day for moms. Happy birthday again, mom.
I might just mention
you
it. It was my mom's birthday yesterday, so happy belated birthday, mom.
But Ethan, you have some serious things to say.
Okay, well, the first thing that you should notice about this article, they don't mention any medical professionals, just like anonymous quotes. And that should be a few red flags right there, because we don't even know what the official medical situation was.
Mm-hmm, maybe it wasn't as dire as the article's saying. We don't know. That's
the
thing.
And then another thing to note is that the Andersons were already big fans of this monk. So, of course, he gets better. Who are they going to, you know, credit with saving him? It's going to be the guy they love.
Well, not the doctors that have been working on his life.
Part of the canonization process, too, is you have to have a few documented miracles. So if they're in favor of this monk and they want him to become a saint, he's not one yet, is he?
No, he's not. But he has been blessed.
Right. But in order for him to become a saint, he has to have a certain number of miracle cures. So, they could be throwing in a ringer for...
Exactly.
I think, a really important thing is for us to, get a grasp on, the whole statistical nature of these types of recoveries. Let's say there's a disease that the recovery rate is, really low. 1 in 100... Or, 1 in 100,000 people die and all the rest... 1 in 100,000 people survive and all the rest die. So then you would think, wow, it's so unlikely for someone to survive. But let's say if 2 million people have this disease, we actually do expect then that 20 of them are going to survive. And it would be more miraculous if 20 people, if only one person survived or if no people survived, that would be more miraculous than having, 20 people survive. And so this might just be a case.
That's a really, really, really good point that people often miss when they talk about these miraculous recoveries. For instance, I said, well, maybe the doctors, whatever they were doing, it worked. They're doctors, right?
Let's see the Vancouver Sun report, front page news on that. Nothing interesting happened in this case.
Well, no, it's interesting. The doctors probably took a risk and did some procedure that didn't have a great chance of working. And in this case, hooray for Mr. Anderson.
Or he was misdiagnosed and he wasn't as bad as they thought he was.
That's another possibility.
Or he was just extremely lucky and the disease went into remission, which is conceivable.
Mm-hmm. It seems like people just love to jump to the most, spiritual and yet unreasonable explanation when there's so many other more reasonable explanations you could come to.
I don't think it's that thing. I mean, once you believe in the whole God thing, you're willing to believe in something without actual proof. So the second step, believing you were miraculously cured by something that may or may not have been real, I mean, once you've drunk the Kool-Aid, it's not that much farther to jump over the bridge either.
Right.
And now we're going to jump over the bridge to a commercial, and when we'll be back, we'll be interviewing Kennedy Goodkey about the Beast of the Bottomless Lake.
I hope it's a commercial about bridges or water. That would make it a really awesome segue.
It's not. Sorry.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in 5 words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we're here with Kennedy, and he's going to tell us a bit about his movie about the Ogopogo.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm excellent, thanks.
So you decide to make a movie, and you pick the Ogopogo. Why not Bigfoot or Sasquatch or that little dog thing that's...
In case we have listeners from, outside of Canada, maybe we should quickly explain what exactly is Ogopogo.
The Ogopogo is Canada's Loch Ness Monster. Simple as that.
So wow. It's like a sea creature?
It's a lake. It's an alleged lake monster that lives in Lake Okanagan.
Interesting.
We were talking before. Does he have relatives in Canada? I've heard of other ones other than Ogopogo that are in Canada.
That's right. There's the Manipogo, I believe, in Lake Manitoba. And the Igopogo is in... you mentioned it before the show. Remind me, Don.
Lake Simcoe.
Lake Simcoe, right. I should know that, really.
He's not like made by Apple, is he?
No, the Igopogo.
So you did a movie about Ogopogo. What does the movie cover? What does it talk about?
Well, it's ultimately fiction. It's a comedy, which is essentially it's a modern retelling of Moby Dick, with the core cast sort of being an adult analog to the Scooby-Doo gang.
Cool. Cool.
Do they have a dog that rocks right wrist?
No, but we do have a British guy who makes an ass of himself.
Oh, that's excellent. Better.
So I guess the people in the crew in the movie believe in Ogopogo?
Some of them do and some of them don't. There is one who vociferously agrees or believes in it and is searching for it, and various assistants who... are on board, but are swayed over the course of the film, and there's a couple who, from the outset, are extremely skeptical.
Because this is a skeptical show, does this movie actually demonstrate skeptical techniques, or does it demonstrate the foo-foo of some of the pseudoscience-type things, or does it try and cover a whole broad base of that kind of thing in your fictional account?
Right. When it was originally written, I had not yet discovered organized skepticism, so my vocabulary for skepticism was not what it is today. But looking at the script now and what has actually ended up on screen, I look at it and go, okay, I actually did have a reasonably good understanding of rational thought and critical thinking without actually having a formal vocabulary in it. So there's points throughout it where the skeptical characters are saying perfectly rational things that I'm actually kind of proud of the fact that they say them.
Cool.
So
I think that's one of the cool things about skepticism is, you know, there were skeptic people in North America before Columbus, and there were people in Australia who were skeptic or whatever, but there were no Christians in either one of those places until they were introduced to it. So skeptical thought can come to people who don't even know what skepticism is because it's reason, and reason's one of the things we do naturally.
Absolutely.
I also really love when there's a movie where the skeptical character could actually be, like, potentially the good guy or the protagonist of the story. So often there's a movie, and, you know, one of the characters is like, I swear I saw a ghost, I swear, and then there's some jerky guy like, come on, you're making it up, and then obviously it turns out in the end that the jerky guy was wrong and there actually was a ghost.
It's not. Oh, yeah. He's always the first guy who gets eaten.
Does anyone get eaten in your show?
I think I should withhold that information just for entertainment value.
So you were telling us before about marketing this, and you got an interesting call from the Globe and Mail, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, we were, Craig and I were on the eve of going to the Okanagan to do our first sort of scouting and business meeting there. And our publicist, Rebecca, sent out a press release to the Okanagan media saying, hey, they're going to be in town. If you want to bank an interview for the future, this is probably a good opportunity. Somebody there, we don't know who, put it out, and it ended up on the CP Newswire. And the next morning at 7 a.m., my phone started ringing, and it was the Globe and Mail. And it just kind of took off from there. That was the beginning. I mean, we spent, you know, from 7 a.m. till 2 o'clock in the afternoon just putting the phone down and picking it up again because it was ringing immediately.
Well, the curse of fate.
What were they calling about?
It was a slow news day. So they just wanted to know about the upstart company that was making a film about the Ogopogo and going to the Okanagan to make it in the place where the Ogopogo exists. There was
supposedly exists, right?
There's yeah.
No actual evidence of an Ogopogo.
There is no evidence that I know of that genuinely.
Plenty of sightings and anecdotes. Yeah.
There was actually a news article this past week about an Ogopogo corpse washing up on the shore of Lake Okanagan.
Ooh,
yeah.
Tell us.
Okay, I'll try and get that. This is working from memory.
Secondhand news.
I believe it was
only on radio.
Someone who was, you know, walking along the beach discovered a 10-foot-long slab of meat sitting on the shores of Lake Okanagan, and immediately decided to call Arlene Gall, who is the world's credulous expert on the Ogopogo, and she immediately, you know, bought in and said, "Oh yeah, that could be an Ogopogo corpse," despite the fact that the Ogopogos that have been previously talked about are way longer than that. So, I mean, it could be just a portion of it. I freely admit that.
Well, no, you know, actually, I think I know what it was, because we all know that recently there's been a big conference about whaling, and I bet you that it was a Japanese whaling fleet that had captured a whale from the Atlantic course and were flying it over the country and got trapped in a windstorm, and part of the corpse of the whale fell into Lake Okanagan as they were going back to Japan.
It's the only logical explanation.
Well, you laugh. But there's one big difference between my explanation and Ogopogo. Is all as unlikely as it might be.
It's likely
it actually happened.
Yes.
So what kind of research did you do to learn about Ogopogo? Did you interview locals, ask for anecdotes, or some books?
There's quite a few books about it. For starters, we had a third partner who passed away in 2001, Keith Provost, who the company's named after. And he grew up in the Okanagan, and he himself had already read all the literature, significantly a couple books by Arlene Gall. And then additionally, we did some, you know, there's all kinds of sources online, but one of our biggest resources was a book called Lake Monster Mysteries by Ben Radford and Joe Nickel. And Actually, I believe it was after we appeared in the Globe and Mail that they had literally just published the book. So their publisher sent us a copy of the book, and we were like, oh, this is excellent. Thank you very much. And yeah, that was very useful in getting a little bit more rational side of the argument into the film.
So I guess after the break, we're going to be talking about these arguments for and against various creatures like the Ogopogo?
Yeah, we'll get right into cryptozoology after this short break.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. And we're talking a bit about cryptozoology. So what is cryptozoology?
Well, you know, I did a little research, and cryptozoology is one of those weird terms. It's like paranormal. It's got a lot of different things. But the term cryptozoology is often attributed to a zoologist named Bernard Hovelman, who I'm poorly mispronouncing his name, I'm sure, who said cryptozoology should be taken as the undertaking of scientific rigor with an open mind to interdisciplinary research. That is, do research into zoology of mysterious things, but keep an open mind to things like local, urban, and folkloric, wow, weird words, folkloric sources regarding it. Often a lot of folklore, a lot of myths and all that have a bit of truth maybe somewhere in the kernel at the base of it, and that these can be used to discover yet undiscovered organisms. So, that being said, cryptozoology is simply looking for mysterious monsters that people talk about, essentially, that have no scientific basis but are folklore legend. Most notably are things like Bigfoot. But cryptozoology, as I have discovered in my research, actually has a very serious point of view. There are a number of things that were cryptozoological beforehand and actually have become zoological because they've been discovered.
Things like what, Don?
Things like the coelacanth, which is a
really old fish.
Well, really old, as in it was believed to be extinct for about 200 million years, and was rediscovered in 1938. The platypus, when it was first discovered, everyone thought, oh, this is a hoax. People have just worked it together because it was so weird. I mean, the platypus itself, it lays eggs, it's venomous, it has a weird body. Other things, like the grolar bear, which is a cross between a polar bear and a grizzly. The okapa, giant panda, giant squid, megamouth shark, all these things were mythical beasts until people took the scientific method, looked into these folkloric things, and found they actually had a real basis.
I think cryptozoology has a really great analogy to natural medicine, because it's kind of like the whole idea of, like, you know, looking for a certain creature, that's cryptozoology, but as soon as you find it, then it's now zoology. Just like, you know, if there's some treatment that doesn't have any evidence for it, we call it alternative medicine, and as soon as we find out it actually works, it's no longer alternative medicine, it's just called medicine.
Right. Well, Kennedy, did you, like, notice when you were making this movie that cryptozoologists actually ascribed to the scientific method, or were they kind of looking for old folk tales and anecdotal evidence?
Right. They tend to go with a lot of anecdotal evidence, and they tell themselves that they're following the scientific method. They often call themselves scientists or amateur scientists, and you know, let's face it, amateur scientist is synonymous with not a scientist at all.
Right.
So,
what's wrong with anecdotal evidence, Ethan? Because one time someone told me that anecdotal evidence is the best way to determine whether something is true or not.
The answer to that.
That's such convincing evidence.
Actually,
it's unreliable.
That was the one thing. When I was doing the research for this, right, I mean, there have been a number of cases that have proven to be real, but that was like maybe 1%. The problem is that there are all these other ones, again, Bigfoot, the Yeti, Loch Ness Monster, the Ogopogo, right, where they've done they've taken this folkloric thing, they've applied the scientific method, and they found nothing. But cryptozoologists won't say, oh, it's not true. They just go, well, it's been unproven. And they keep the unproven open indefinitely. But there's a point where you got to put a pin in saying, like, Loch Ness, we've scanned the entire loch from side to side with radar. We've investigated up the wazoo. There is no such thing as a Loch Ness monster.
Then there'll be some, like, special pleading. Like, they'll say, oh, the Loch Ness monster is especially capable of not being seen or something.
Yeah, it can phase out and be missed by radar or whatever. People
it can
will,
also describe itself as a blurry picture of a toy submarine.
Yes, and Sasquatch, Bigfoot proponents will rely on the thousands of really sketchy sightings and say, okay, how can there be thousands of sightings? Like, they're so close, they may not be 100% proof in any of them, but there's so many.
They
add up to 100, exactly.
Yeah, I saw a statistic recently that there has been sightings of Bigfoot in every single state of the United States except for Rhode Island. Repeated sightings. I'm moving to Rhode Island.
Come on, Rhode Island. Keep up.
It was a neat article about the one guy in Rhode Island that is like a Bigfoot hunter and he's never found anything.
Nah.
But I mean, like, how is it possible that so many sightings are made of this creature, yet no other evidence of its existence is there?
Like
just
a body?
Just anecdotal evidence.
It's expectant observation. Which is another term for a very specific type of pareidolia. You are going in expecting to see a specific thing. You're near Lake Okanagan, so you see a boat wake, and you go, oh my God, there's a serpent in the water. And, you know, it tricks your eye into thinking that there's a serpent in the water. One of the more famous Ogopogo sightings, the Chaplin film, is a little sort of mouse. It's not a little, it's quite a large rodent-like head with about 20 feet of body and then a big flat tail. And you can see how that might look like some sort of lake serpent. When biologists came, Stan Orchard is the name of one of them, I couldn't name the others off the top of my head. When biologists came in to actually look at the film for, I think it was Unsolved Mysteries that it was on, they took one look at it and kind of bit their tongues and went to the pub and said, okay, is there any doubt in anybody's mind what this is? And that is how beavers ferry logs, one at the front and one at the back. And you can see how your mind might go, oh my God, you know, it's backlit, it looks like one piece. Who knows?
I guess the only way to really, like, determine that there's been a species, like, that's been discovered is you need a specimen, right? You need to actually find, like, a dead carcass or live of some animal, then you'd be like, I think this animal exists.
The problem with that is there's only one Ogopogo.
And does it live forever?
Well, apparently.
How did it come to be?
Because it's been there since, like,
the dawn of time.
Yeah. Turns out that Ogopogo, Manipogo, Loch Ness Monster, they're all the same one. They're all interconnected by underground tunnels, and they just swim around.
And this is absolutely one of their theories. That's why you don't find it. It's because it's in the middle of the tunnel to Cadborough Bay.
Oh, my hand was just about to slap the back of Rob's head before Candy said that.
It's true. They have crazy, whacked out beliefs.
But again, I think that's that shows where you have the idea that many people claim skeptics can believe in anything or believe in nothing. But there are guidelines. You know, there's a thing. It's good to be skeptical to say that this could exist. But then you've gone too far if you sit there and say, well, it could exist, and it could be traveling some subterranean labyrinth between Loch Ness and Ogopogo where it's hiding.
Well, I think Kennedy made a good point to me before the show. He was saying, like, every single day that goes by decreases the probability that it exists. So I guess it's still technically possible that Ogopogo exists, but considering days and days keep on going by,
more evidence mounts every day. Its lack of presence is evidence itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, we got a few minutes left here. Oh. Kennedy, when you went there, and obviously you're a skeptic, I think people would pick that up, did they, you know, resent that about you being in their neighborhood debunking their favorite little snaky, beastie monster thing?
Is that a technical term?
I think it is, actually.
Snaky monster thing. To the best of my knowledge, no. We certainly didn't really hear any about that as we were making the film. We actually got a lot of support from the community. A lot of people came out, invested time and resources in helping us put together the movie. And there are certainly some people there who have a lot of personal investment in the existence of the Ogopogo, but I think a lot of people realize that where their tourism dollars come from that are attached to the Ogopogo are actually attached to what is now pretty much morphed from an Indian legend into a cartoon representation, you know, in their beach parks and
and
forth.
I guess that sells any quite press, a lot of merchandise.
Any press of a movie's made about Ogopogo, a lot of people might go to the Okanagan to go see the location itself, especially if the movie's as popular as we all hope it will be.
They're really hoping, yes.
So where could we see the movie and when?
That is a valid question. We just started submitting to festivals, and we will hopefully know by mid-August ourselves.
All right, and it's called The Beast of Bottomless Lake?
Yes, you can find it on www.provostpictures.com.
Excellent. Well, we're right out of time, so let's go quickly to our skeptical quote. Maybe Kennedy could read that for us.
Oh, dear. Where is it? Right there. Okay. I wish I had seen this before. In the beginning, the universe was created. This made a lot of people angry and has been widely regarded as a bad move. There is a theory which states that if anybody ever discovers exactly what the universe is for and why it is here, it will instantly disappear and be replaced by something even more bizarre and inexplicable. There's another theory which states that this has already happened. Douglas Adams, Viruses of the Mind.
Excellent. Well, this is Ethan, your Prithian historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Elon saying have a great evening and see you at Skeptics in the Pub tonight.
This is Rob saying thank you to our special guest, Kennedy Goodkey.
This is Kennedy Goodkey saying thanks a lot, guys. This was fun.
Excellent. See you later, everybody.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend.